गोपी जना वल्लभा गिरीवर धारे यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारे यमुना तीरावन चारे राध माधव कुंज विहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शत श्री श्रीमद् हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद् भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरांग नारायण नमस्कृत्य नरम चैव नरोत्तमम देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जय मुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिके ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय सो वी आर इन चैप्टर 7 टेक्स्ट 24 अन्वया व्यतिरेकेण विवेकेनो सतात्मना स्वर्गस्थान समाम्नायैर् विश्रम विमृषद्भिर् असत्वरै अन्वय व्यतिरेकेण विवेकेनो सतात्मना स्वर्गस्थान समानायर विमृषद्भिर असत्वरै अन्वया व्यतिरेकेण ಅನ್ವಯ ಡೈರೆಕ್ಟ್ಲಿ, ವ್ಯತಿರೇಕೇಣ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಇನ್ಡೈರೆಕ್ಟ್ಲಿ, ವಿವೇಕೇನ ಬೈ ಮೆಚ್ಯೂರ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕ್ರಿಮಿನೇಷನ್, ಉಷತ ಪ್ಯೂರಿಫೈಡ್, ಆತ್ಮನ ವಿತ್ ದ ಮೈಂಡ್, ಸ್ವರ್ಗ ಕ್ರಿಯೇಷನ್, ಸ್ಥಾನ ಮೇಂಟೆನೆನ್ಸ್, ಸಮಾಮ್ನಾಯೈ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ವಿತ್ ಡಿಸ್ಟ್ರಕ್ಷನ್, ವಿಮೃಷದ್ಭಿರ್ ಬೈ ದೋಸ್ ಮೇಕಿಂಗ್ ಎ ಸೀರಿಯಸ್ ಅನಾಲಿಸಿಸ್, ಅಸತ್ವರೈ ವೆರಿ ಸೋಬರ್. ಟ್ರಾನ್ಸ್ಲೇಷನ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಪ್ರಪೋರ್ಟ್ ಬೈ ಶಿಲು ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ಕಿ ಜಾಯ್. Sober and expert persons should search for the spirit soul within minds purified through analytical study in terms of the soul's connection with and distinction from all things that undergo creation, maintenance and destruction. Shall I read again? It's a very nice instruction. Sober and expert persons should search for the spirit soul with minds purified through analytical study in terms of the soul's connection with and distinction from all things that undergo creation, maintenance and destruction. Purport. A sober person can study himself and distinguish the soul from the body by analytical study. For example, when one considers his body, his head, his hands, and so on, one can certainly understand the difference between the spirit soul and the body. No one says, I head. Everyone says, my head. Thus, there are two entities, the head and I. They are not identical, although they appear to be one conglomeration. One may argue, when we analyze the body, we find a head, hands, legs, a belly, bone, stool, urine, and so on. But after everything is considered, where is the existence of the soul? A sober man, however, avails himself of this Vedic instruction. Yato va imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat pranayati ಅಭಿಷಮ್ ವಸಂತಿ ತದ್ ವಿಜ್ಞಾಸಸ್ವ ತದ್ ಬ್ರಹ್ಮೇತಿ ತೈತ್ರಿಯ ಉಪನಿಷತ್. Thus he can understand that the head, hands, legs and indeed the entire body have grown on the basis of the soul. If the soul is within, the body, heads, hands and legs grow, but otherwise they do not. A dead child does not grow up, for the soul is not present. If by a careful analysis of the body one still cannot find the existence of the soul, this is due to his ignorance. How can a gross man fully engaged in materialistic activities understand the soul, which is a small particle of spirit, 1/10,000 the size of the tip of a hair? Such a person foolishly thinks that the material body has grown from a combination of chemicals, although he cannot find them. The Vedas inform us, however, that chemical combination do not constitute the living force. The living force is the Atma and Paramatma, and the body grows on the basis of that living force. The fruit of a tree grows and undergoes six kinds of change, because of the presence of the tree. If there were no tree, there could be no question of the growth and maturity of fruit. Therefore, beyond the existence of the body are Paramatma and Atma within the body. This is the first understanding of spiritual knowledge explained in Bhagavad Gita. Dehinosmin yatha dehe. The body exists because of the presence of the Supreme Lord and the Jiva, which is part of the Lord. This is further explained by the Lord himself in Bhagavad Gita 9:4. Maya tatamidam sarvam jagadavyakta murtina matsthani sarva bhutani Nachaham teshvavastitaha. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. The Supreme Soul exists everywhere. The Vedas enjoin sarvam khalavidam brahma. Everything is Brahman or an expansion of Brahman's energies. Sutre manigana iva. Everything rests on the Lord, just like pearls strung together on a thread. The thread is the principal Brahman. He is the supreme cause, the supreme Lord upon whom everything rests. Matta parataram nanyat. Thus we must study the Atma and Paramatma, the individual soul and the super soul, upon whom the entire material cosmic manifestation rests. This is explained by the Vedic statement, Yato va imani bhutani jayante, yena jatani jivanti. Can someone open a window in the back? It's a little claustrophobic. Thank you. Om ajnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chaksur unmilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivas Adi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So this section of or on analysis starts somewhere around the seventeenth verse. So then, for the past eight verses, there is some discussion by Prahlad Maharaj on an analytical view by which to distinguish between spirit and matter. And he says, I have learned this, and you will also understand me if you have a little faith in my words, just as I had faith in the words of Narada Muni. And he says, although you're children, you can understand it, and even women can understand it. Which means that it's not an insult to women. What it means is that this is so foundational, this analysis, this information is so foundational and in one sense quite easy if heard properly and from the right source. Hearing properly is within the, I would say control if you will, is within the control of the student. And the right source is to find the right parampara or the right person, a bona fide person who can represent a parampara. Then this knowledge can be understood. Now, there are many persons who don't belong to a particular parampara but can explain this very, very nicely with many examples, stories, analogies, in technicalities. And mostly people leave the crowd with what's called a wow factor. Wow. But you know that knowledge has not entered, because nothing in the lives of the audience changes. They do the same thing that they were doing. As they say, information, but no transformation. Nothing has changed. So it requires a bona fide person to bring that change. That's their potency. So Prahlad is doing this for a particular reason. He wants them to be able to come to that first step or the very platform on which spiritual life stands. And that very first platform is, I am not this body. And he is very much a representative of a parampara. Of course, he had heard from Narada Muni, no doubt. It's because he's following the same track, if you will, that the Supreme Lord takes. So one might say, well, actually the Bhagavad Gita was spoken after. But Krishna says that I spoke this way in the beginning to Vivaswan, who spoke to his son, Manu, who spoke to Ikshvaku, etc. So this knowledge has been there for millions and millions of years. And what's the first step in any discussion? You hear Prabhupada, what's the first step that he talks about? You're not this body. It is such an important and liberating truth. Because the other side, the flip side, I am this body, aham and mama, are the cause of all of one's suffering. It's so this I am not this body principle is like the cure at the very, very core level. A good doctor does not only heal symptoms. For example, someone has a headache, let's say. In modern medicine, if they say, I have a headache, they'll say, yeah, take some Tylenol. But a real doctor will analyze why the headache is there. Whether it's because of indigestion or some other reasons. Neurological, whatever, reasons. I'm not a doctor. I know a few words to get you into the wow factor. But the doctor will analyze and treat the very core of the problem. So this dehinosmin yatha dehe is the first attempt at the solving the core of the problem. I am not this body. And today's instruction, Prahlad Maharaj is saying that one should practice this regularly, carefully. So the first he says, anvaya. Anvaya means with direct knowledge. So yesterday, Acharyanishtha Prabhu was bringing up this question. That's how the class ended, I think. That Mukunda, whoever feels, yeah, Mukunda felt, hey, this is, I am not this body. Doesn't make it practical for me. Or how am I supposed to live? So the answer was, we should consider ourselves not what we are not, but who we are. This also has place, what we are not. For example, when we are in some difficult situation, let's say something is disturbing us physically or something is disturbing us mentally or emotionally, whatever. And we notice that because of a bodily conception, we tend to give that particular disturbance, physical or mental, a very significant space in our time and day, or in our time and in our mental attention. And while that may be important, we have to see it from the right perspective. For example, whether it is pain, physical or mental pain, the knowledge that I am not this body, I am not this particular emotion, sadness, anger, whatever it is, I am not that. That's the purport the Prabhupada is saying. We don't say I head, we don't say I hand, I say my head, my hand. The difference is on the emotional level, let's say, we identify with the emotion and therefore we say, I am angry. Which means I'm identifying with the anger, or I am sad. But when we say that I'm not this body, I'm actually a spirit soul that does not have anger, sadness, all these things, then we can better express ourselves, I am feeling anger, which puts us a little distant from that emotion. Or when two people are arguing or something, it's important to say, I'm not this body. That's not that body either. It is the clash of the modes of nature. It helps us separate ourselves from the very situation that is binding us. Because Krishna describes that when one identifies with the body or that particular emotion, one does things that further exacerbate or worsen the illusion. You understand? If there is something illusory and we walk into it, then we create more illusion from it, or we allow for more illusion to manifest. But if we step aside and say, wow, that's not for me, then that illusion doesn't exist, or it doesn't touch a person. Say it another way. Many philosophers, and the reason I'm analyzing this is because this is Prahlad Maharaj's instruction. First he says, anvaya, directly, vyatirekena, indirectly. He says, vivekena. Viveka means matured discrimination. It is the fruit of intelligence. Viveka means being able to distinguish on the basis of realization. So the discussion I'm having is from that viveka side, because it analyzes things down to the bare truth. For example, when we project a movie on a screen, and in that movie, different emotions are churned. So depending on the genre, right? If it is a horror movie, then we are scared because of the music, the build-up, the dark, you know, not enough lighting, and the surprise element. Right? Or if it is drama, whatever, sadness, or they take a particular emotion and really... good movie makers, whoever. They churn it so that we feel it. Or action, excitement, humor, whatever it is. So viveka basically means with discrimination, a person can say that is nothing but projection of some light on a screen. Because as soon as you turn off the projection, what remains is the screen and nothing else. But the moment this projection on that white screen, it comes to life. All our emotions are churned. Nobody sits in front of a blank white screen and laughs or cries or becomes excited on the edge of their seat. That's madness. Right? No one does. But as soon as you project something, whoa, the whole thing comes to life. So to viveka is to be able to analyze to the bare bones and say, it's just a projection. But if I play into that illusion, boy, everything, oh yeah, my emotions, I know how this feels, I also feel like that. One lives one's own life on the basis of some projection on a screen. So it's important to understand, I'm distinct from all of this. I'm distinct from the modes of nature. I'm distinct from this body. It helps us see things in the right perspective. So let's say we have a cut or bruise on our body and that hurts like anything. Right? Our whole attention goes to that thing the whole day. It may be a pinprick, but that's where our attention is. But when we consider, I am not this body. It's because I identify with this body, now this pain has significance. Such considerations allow for us to experience less of such pain. For example, let's say, for argument's sake, let's say someone makes a joke on Indian people. Right? Even if I don't live in India, even if I know that I'm not this body, somehow I feel like I have to defend India. Or if I make a joke on whatever, in America, or I don't know if I could say Iran like this, but let's say, it comes up, hey, Indian people are not like that. Hey, Iranians are not like that, or Russians are not like that, or Americans are not like that. You want to make it worse, then you go to their race, right? Or you make some joke about, or some put down line about something, and immediately it comes up. Because that identification is there. I am Indian. But if someone makes a joke, let's say, on Indian people, and I have that realization, I am not Indian, I'm not American, I'm not this body. They make a joke. Yeah, so what? They make a joke. Let's say you drive a Prius, whatever. We make some really nasty jokes on Prius. It's called Namo Namo Priyasi, very dear to us. Priyas means very dear, very lovable, right? Priyasi, very lovable object. And why are they saying about Priyas? Look at him, he's driving a Camry, that's even worse, or whatever. We identify, this is mine. But to say, whatever, someone makes a joke, how does it matter to me? Or, you know, when jokes are made about fat people, thin people, short people, dark people, light people, we identify, and therefore we get wound up in it. Oh, they're talking about me. No. So this is very interesting. Prahlad Maharaj is saying half or more than half of person's problems can just get mitigated by understanding, I'm not this body. I'm not this mind. I am not these modes of nature. I'm distinct from all of this. And I find these problems because I'm identifying with them. So he says, vivekena. And then he says, ushata atmana. Very critical phrase. Ushata means purified. So as long as the mind is not purified, of what? This I and mine conception, one will not be able to identify the distinction between body and soul. And therefore we say we chant Hare Krishna as one of our main purificatory means, so that Cheta Darpana, the mind, becomes purified to be able to say, I am not this body. I am not Indian. I am not American. I am not man. I am not dark. Whatever. I'm not this, I'm not the emotions. It's liberating in that sense, in the true sense of the word. It's liberating. So he says, ushata atmana. But if the mind is not becoming purified, then this will continue. All the, within the illusion, you know, looking at the movie screen and crying and laughing and living on the basis of some projection. And that's too much suffering. It's almost madness, illusion. So he says, and what should one analyze? Svarga sthana samam nayar. One should see how everything has birth, maintenance and destruction within this world, including this body that I'm inhabiting. It goes through these three stages: birth, maintenance, and death. Anything in this world goes through these things except the spirit soul. The universe itself, any building, any body, regardless of what species it is in, even our day goes through those phases. And in fact, these three are called three sandhya. The three phases in creation, or three phases in matter. Something is born, something stays, and that same thing dies. Therefore we hear, right, Krishna uses these three phases in that verse, Dehinosmin Yatha Dehe, Kaumaram Yavanam Jara. And Prabhupada says, these three constitute the three phases of life. We have three phases of the day. Morning is when the day is born. Daytime, when the day is maintained. And nighttime, when the day is ending. And we sing, Dhyayam Stuvam Stu Yashas Trisandhyam. I'm glorifying, I'm meditating on the glories of my spiritual master during the three phases of the day. And Prabhupada explains in one lecture that we are meant to meditate on the glories of the Guru during the three phases of life as well. Kaumaram, Yavanam, Jara. Everything goes through these phases, these three. And he says, Vimrushad Bhir Asatvarai. One has to be serious about this. Not some lackadaisical or casual approach to life, but serious approach to life, with serious analysis. And because of that serious analysis, one remains sober. Dhira is the word in Bhagavad Gita. Here is called Asatvarai. Asatvara means one who's not pulled and pushed or, you know, influenced by asat, illusion. So a sober person means who can distinguish and stay and say, hey, this is all illusion. But let's say a small child, when a magician says, oh, I have these four cards. I got this three from here, one from there. Oh, wow. How does he do it? How does he do it? A person who's sober knows it's nothing but the sleight of hand. One is just very expert at hiding. Magicians say when they use this hand, they're actually doing stuff with this that they take our attention here. And they're moving something, they manipulate here. But a person who's sober can say, that's just a sleight of hand. It's a trick. But one has to be sober to identify, oh, that's a trick. So this asatvarai is very necessary to be sober. And to be sober, one's mind has to become purified. Otherwise, cannot become sober. The opposite of sober is under the influence of, right? Intoxicated by something. When one is intoxicated by eye and mind conception, one cannot see, I am an illusion. So it takes someone else to turn off the projector and show us the bare white screen. You're looking at a white screen and laughing and crying and becoming scared. There is no, you know, what is that ghost behind that door? There is no door. There's nothing. It's just an illusion. Oh. So one needs the help of a guru to remove that. So the whole purport is this explanation. So one needs the understanding, I am not this body. To separate oneself from the illusory activities and then the right conception. I'm a servant of Krishna. So that when I am in particular situation, how do I operate with my body and mind? So both are together, the flip side of each other. You can't do one without the other. To say I'm just a servant of Krishna is wonderful. I have to have the other knowledge as well, but I'm not this body. Otherwise I might think I'm a servant of Krishna who is in this particular, you know, and I am this body. Therefore, I'm an Indian servant of Krishna. I'm an American servant of Krishna. I'm a male servant of Krishna. It tinges that a little bit. It's and whenever we find ourselves in some very complex situation, which is, you know, every 5 minutes or less, in this material world, right? That's what Kali Yuga is. Every few moments, something very complicated is what we're dealing with. Anyone disagree? No. Hopefully not. So it's very important to know, I'm not this body. And therefore you'll find the whole Bhagavad Gita filled with this lesson and scattered throughout in second chapter. In the fourth chapter, in the seventh, in the eighth, in the ninth, in the 12th, in the 13th, 18th, whole sections there. And Krishna uses that a person who is free from the dualities, I and mine primarily, is a person who's always happy. And so, in honor and dishonor, in profit and in loss, in summer or in winter, in whatever, in honor and honor and dishonor, I already said, like these dualities, one remains unaffected. And such a person is called Sthita Pragya. Correct? We heard this so many. Sthita Pragya is a person who has Viveka, matured discrimination ability. They can see the words of scripture playing out every moment. They see from the eyes of scripture. So Prahlad Maharaj is helping us and all his friends to get out of this. So I'll end with this one. One sec. In the 13th chapter, there is text 8 to 12. Right? These are the famous verses where Krishna describes 20 items. And this is in response to Arjuna's question, what is knowledge? In the beginning of 13th chapter, he asks 6 questions. Who is the knower of the field? Who is the field? What is knowledge? What is to be known? Etc. Right? So Krishna answers all these 6 questions throughout the chapter. In this section, 8 through 12, in answer to what is knowledge, he doesn't say chemistry, physics, biology, health management, or engineering, or what's your PhD in, Radha Krishna Prabhu? Energy. Wow. Energy. Whatever, marketing research, doesn't matter. He identifies qualities by which a person is known as educated. So they're character based. And in those, in that list, there is this hidden element where it says, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, I and mine, or mine and I, the order in which it is, perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease. Without this, that perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease cannot come. And he says, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest. Why? Because those things perpetuate, when not understood properly, they perpetuate the sense of I and mine like anything. It's like a constant movie playing out and we're in the movie, called virtual reality. We are in it. About a month ago, I was at Best Buy with Prahlad for something we had to buy. So at one of the Samsung counters, this guy had a phone that Samsung is, I guess, coming out with, that gets attached to a casing like goggles. You put them on, and that's the phone right there, and it has virtual reality software. So once you put them on, depending on if you look there, it comes with a menu, depending on where you look, it picks that menu. Then there was something, a Jurassic something. So you pick that, and suddenly you're transported into a forest with trees and a sleeping some dinosaur, I don't even know their names. And so when you turn your head like this, it shows you the rest of the forest. You turn your head like that, it shows you the stream and all that. So you're there. And then suddenly the dinosaur wakes up, moves its head, and notices you there, and comes close to you, like that. And we're now in the forest with the dinosaur, but anyone standing outside, because noticing Prahlad, what do this? And he was like, For an outsider, it's like, what's wrong with this guy? But you now, you're in it. The dinosaur apparently flips its tail like that and almost hits you, so you got to duck so you don't get hit by the dinosaur tail or something. So he goes like that. So now you're living it. But as soon as you take that off, oh, I'm in Best Buy. So the perils of identifying with the body is that virtual reality. Wow, I'm in the forest. And Prahlad Maharaj is cutting it for us. Don't live like this in illusion. See with viveka, with discrimination. And that discrimination comes when one hears from one's guru carefully. Shushushaya shraddhadhanasya vasudeva katharuchi shyan mahat sevaya vipraha. Shushushaya means to hear with faith. Actually, it means service attitude. But service, you cannot. Hearing is part of that service, right? Then one can break that illusion. I am not this body. This is just the modes of nature, and I am not going to walk into it and play there. Because the moment I walk in, I am playing. You know, I'm being influenced by one of the modes of nature: passion, ignorance, goodness, etc. I'm not worth it. So that's the purport in different verses that Krishna is describing. One should see one's individuality or distinction from the material nature. And go around, walk around. Every day look around and see where there's a combination of matter and spirit. This whole material world is a combination of matter and spirit. Matter. Matter and spirit. Matter, whatever. Matter and spirit. And it's important to see distinctions like that. It helps. Okay? Any comments? You had something, I'm sorry, I didn't.
So the conception of the ego in the spiritual sense, the I would be, I'm a servant of Krishna.
I am a servant of Krishna.
What would the my be?
I belong to Krishna, and mine is my service to Krishna.
Oh, so our service is kind of our, like what we take it.
In the spiritual ego, the sense of mine is not necessarily driving us per se. But I and mine would be, the mind would be my relationship with Krishna.
Could you say Krishna's mind? Because I've heard that before.
Oh, why not? Yeah. And Krishna is mine and I am Krishna's. But Krishna is mine not in the sense of I own him. But Krishna is mine in the sense that that's my relationship. That's my only relationship. It doesn't mean relationship with others are not important. But it's in with Krishna in the center. I think that's the phrase we're all used to.
Right. Another question I had was,
the sense of I and mine is discussed in the material sense is because the extensions of body we have a tendency to have to claim ownership. But when we have a right sense of I, you understand, I want nothing.
Yeah.
It's Krishna's. Krishna has a sense of I and mine. I am the Supreme Lord and everything is mine. Aham sarvasya prabhava, matta sarvam pravartate.
And I was also going to ask, so is this process of distinguishing matter and spirit, would this be considered like just something the helper bhakti? It's not necessarily bhakti itself.
It is within bhakti.
It is.
Oh, why not?
So it, because I've heard that things like this, like being dispassionate or doing yoga practices, I've heard the term, it's called sangha siddha, mm-hmm. where it's like augmenting your bhakti. But does that make it bhakti, or is it still outside of bhakti?
Well, We heard Maharaj quote the verse yesterday. Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Ashu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yadahaitukam. That by engaging in devotional service, knowledge and renunciation come as byproducts. So knowledge is within bhakti. Otherwise it remains sentimental. So there is knowledge. Krishna is giving us, Prabhupada is giving us. So it is knowledge that has the context within bhakti. So I wouldn't see I am not this body, these are the modes of nature as distinct from bhakti necessarily. Yeah. Rafiq.
I had a question about it says the Supreme Soul exists everywhere.
Could you speak up a little bit, please?
It says the Supreme Soul exists everywhere. Is that pertaining to Krishna?
Yes.
Okay, so my question was, in the Bhagavad Gita it also says that the individual spirit soul is present everywhere as well.
The individual soul is also present
it's
everywhere.
It's also present everywhere.
Sure.
I was trying to think of an analogy, and I couldn't think of one,
okay.
Of course, with my limited knowledge, but I just needed one.
The context of everywhere needs to be understood. The influence of the soul, the individual soul, the influence is within the context of the body that it occupies. So in that sense, the soul is everywhere in the body by dint of consciousness. True? Everywhere. From the tip of the finger, if someone plucks one hair from our head or touches us, we are aware. Correct? I'm looking for a yes or no, sir. Do we have consciousness spread throughout our body? So therefore I'm explaining. Do we have consciousness spread throughout our body? Answer is yes. No, everywhere within its influence. Now the super soul is in the gigantic universal body. So he's everywhere in the body. He's aware and conscious of everything within that body. I'm everywhere and conscious of everything within the body I am in. So I'm everywhere in that sense. Another way is the individual soul is also everywhere in the universe. Not that one particular soul, but there are souls inhabiting the entire universe. Not just planet Earth, which is such a tiny speck of creation. I mean, it is very bombastic and arrogant to say in this whole universe, 6 billion or 7 billion human beings are the only significant, or that life exists only on Earth. It doesn't make any sense. So Prabhupada writes in that purport, there is life in the sun, moon, every star is inhabited by living entities. So it's everywhere also that way. But it's not correct understanding that I as an individual soul, I'm there throughout the universe. No. This is my universe. As soon as I leave this universe, if let's say Dan has a headache, I can't be aware of it. I can't sense it. Even if he says, I'd say, oh, okay. Only because I know what headache looks like, I'll say, oh yeah, I'm so sorry you have a headache. But I don't feel it. It is within this universe, if you will. I'm everywhere. All pervading. Jitendra Prabhu.
Srila Prabhupada was hadn't been into the cold until he came to the United States. Uh-huh. And he said, I can handle the extreme heat, but I can't handle the extreme cold. So you know, then you're saying you're not the body, but the sensations of the dualities are there.
Sure.
So we have to learn to tolerate that, but there's a certain point where we can't tolerate it because it's so pervasive.
It's so pervasive because the identification is deep-rooted. So to the degree we have, we are free from bodily identification, to that degree we have tolerance.
The less we suffer.
The less we identify with suffering, yes.
But it's...
But if we have, if we are completely free of the bodily identification, then, you know, yeah, it's cold. Prabhupada, the tooth pain, kidneys not functioning, so many other situations. But we can't say Prabhupada was suffering, suffering. He didn't identify with it. Did he feel the pain? Sure. Did he? Did that stop him from doing what he has to do? No.
Mm-hmm.
But we see that in our case, well, as in my case, when the body and mind are suffering, it blocks everything else that I have to do.
Mm-hmm. And then as far as...
So to take that further, Mukunda's left. When let's say we have a body or mind malady, and there is service at hand, whatever that service is, hearing or chanting or physical something, whatever. I'm a servant of Krishna, helps, even if it's for the moment, helps transcend that. Either by a sense of duty or obligation, one can transcend that. And we find vestiges of it, very, very far, you know, small vestiges of it, even in the material world. Let's say a woman who's a mother is suffering. She has a headache. She has children at home who need to be fed. Instead of saying, I have a headache, forget about food. A person who's driven by duty will transcend it just to make sure that that duty is performed. Now what to speak about, now that's just a material example. If the child turns out to be ungrateful, then you know all of it goes out of the window. What to speak about, I'm a servant of Krishna. Then that's what's the driving fact.
As far as mundane personalities go, one that tolerated pain was Joseph Stalin. He was real sick or something, and they said, well, he's really tolerant. There's a lot of pain going on here, but he was determined, and so he didn't take the medication, but he went on with his... I guess killing more people.
Our guru, Prahlad Maharaj, because we're hearing from him, his dad stood on the toes, tippy toes, with arms raised for 100 celestial years. Didn't breathe, didn't eat. Fire in his head. The whole universal breathing was stopped.
For sense gratification.
But for what, exactly?
Prabhupada says intoxication, you know, and then he would say, you're already intoxicated, you know, because you're identifying with something that you're not. The word Vivek used to be, there's a devotee, Balaram.
Yes.
And
he still is.
Yeah. But I don't think Prabhupada, if a person had the name Vince, he didn't give him the name Vivekananda. So I guess he wanted to distance us from the that group. But as far as changing names go, I was just thinking of Ben Kingsley, the actor. You know what his real name was?
I thought that was his real name.
Krishna B-R-A-J. So I guess maybe Krishna as a name wasn't good enough for him or something.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay.
But anyways, let's see here.
So much of knowledge.
Thank you.
Thank you. Items of knowledge. What is Ben Kingsley's original name? Jai Baldev and then Justin. Oh, you have a question? Sure. Related to this topic.
If we could explore a little more deeply on the day-to-day level, you know, yeah. When we have devotees, you know, we have services,
yeah. How
to not let these temporary sensations of the mind interfere with your serving? What are some principles that can help us? Because sometimes we should have some duty, you know, on a daily basis. I have to do this or that. That's my service. But Krishna consciousness is voluntary, so there's also that aspect. And then sometimes, based on the temporary situation of our mind, it creates the obstacle for carrying out the duty. So how can we...
Good question. My answer may not be popular, but it's a good question. So let me... I'm thinking where to start. Okay, I'll start somewhere, we'll put it together. We are walking, or we are trying to walk away, notionally, from the idea that I am this body and I have an identification with my body, and walking into, I'm trying to be a servant of Krishna. Okay? And what helps us transition from that ego, false ego, to this ego is Shravanam. Actually, more than Shravanam, but Shravanam is the, as we say, Shravanadi, beginning with Shravanam. And the reason being that our activities are driven by our conceptions of life. If someone told me, hey, you want to make a lot of money, do this, and that's what I'm connected to, I will hear about how to make money and I will pursue that. Whether I make money or not is a different thing, but I'll pursue that. So it said that Shravanam is the most powerful medium, sound vibration that moves my conceptions. So as a practicing devotee, we have one foot there and another foot there. Or say it more technically in one sense, consciously we are here, subconsciously we're still in that old conception somewhere, because it's deep-rooted. So if you think of proportion, from 100% materialistic, maybe we are now 80% materialistic and 20% devotees or servants of Krishna. Okay? So in any situation, as long as it's within that 20%, we draw from that 20% and we're serving. Okay, let's say I'm tired, but I know something needs to get done. I'll push myself as much as I can draw from that 20%. As soon as I hit the 21st percent, I'll say, I can't do it anymore. I'm done. Because my other bodily is drawing me, right? So for some it may be 20%, some it may be 2%, some it may be 60%. And in case of our founder Acharya, who we look up to, say 100%. Prabhupada is just always in that service to Krishna mode. So then those who are training the devotees or helping, it is important to understand how to grow that proportion from 20 to 25 to 30 to 40. So it is through Shravanam Adi. And once in a while, Krishna pushes us from that limit a little forward. And we take that step on the basis of our faith and hearing. Okay, this is important for me to do, because this is service to Krishna. We use the word preaching for it. Hey, I need to preach to you, right? Someone speaks to us. We're servant of Krishna. Try whatever you can. I know it's difficult. Push yourself a little bit. it's important, try some, you know, adjust yourself in this way or that. You know, however a person preaches to us, we have faith in those words. That's right, I want to be a servant of Krishna. From tomorrow I'll... And I take that one extra step, let's say. Then my realization grows. Oh yeah, I can transcend that pain, or I can set it aside for the time being, or Krishna, please give me some strength. And sometimes mystically we find strength that we didn't have. Or we have to fast on Janmashtami. I've done this experiment. You try fasting on Janmashtami, it's easier. You pick any random day and you say, I'll fast, and it doesn't work like that. Certain days are empowered. So then we learn how to tap into Krishna's mercy. That's the whole practice. How do I tap into that mercy? Someone has to help me do that. So we find where our limit is. Now, the other part of the question, does that help? The other part of the question was, yeah, but we say bhakti is voluntary. It is true. Bhakti is voluntary, but certain things are not. Just as once you make a choice, the outcome of the choice, we don't have the volition to say, I'll do the act, but I don't want the outcome. We use the when we discuss karma, which is what we're going to do today at IIT, I think, is if I choose to go to New York, I have the choice to buy the ticket. I have the choose whether, I can choose whether to go to the airport or not. I can choose whether to get into the flight or not. But once I get in, I cannot say, I don't want to go to New York. That plane goes to New York. If I stand up in the middle of the flight and say, I don't want to go to New York, stop this plane right now, I'll face severe consequences. That plane goes to New York. So until then, I have a choice. And once I've made the choice, it moves in a particular way. So once I choose, I want to, whatever, serve Krishna in this way, and I pick up something, then yeah, I have the volition to drop everything. But what happens with that is I become untrustworthy or unreliable. Then I can't live my life, whether it is bhakti or bhukti. Even if I, let's say, not a devotee, I pick a job. And if I'm not reliable, I'm not responsible, because, hey, life is all about voluntary, then they'll say, okay, we also have the volition to ask you to get out, right? So there are certain things. Submission means I am accepting to live by these principles. That's the volition I have made. And then when the principles say do this and do that, I can't say, well, I have the volition to not do. We already submitted. You can choose to not submit, but then you don't belong in the framework of where those principles operate. There's always room, of course. It's, you know, there's always room for I'm having this and I'm having that and I'm dealing with this or I'm dealing with that. That's fine. You understand? I kept it general intentionally. I can be very specific if you want. But
a few weeks ago, I think you said... you know, similar, but is a little different. But there's no service attitude. So there's no. You know, you give a person all this information and stuff. They have books and they have knowledge and they have understanding of Krishna consciousness, but they don't have any service attitude. So they don't really evolve to the higher platform.
Well, they don't have service attitude. Our understanding is that service attitude is there. It's in a very dormant condition. It's the service attitude of the speaker that awakens the service attitude of the hearer. Just as fire is already there in wood, but you need external fire to bring out the fire in the wood. So if the speaker doesn't have service attitude, the audience will not get it. Therefore, Prabhupada said, don't go to professional reciters, even if they speak wonderfully. charming like anything, nothing will happen in terms of your connection with Krishna. Everyone say, wow, wow. But live the same. They'll go to McDonald's for lunch after that.
Prabhupada was... most devotees heard this, you know. They asked Prabhupada, what class of men are you? There's four classes. And Prabhupada says, I'm a fifth class because I'm serving all the other classes. And then he said, they see that I'm serving, so they serve, so there's no envy. So that's something that just came to mind.
Thank you for sharing. Jai Baldev and then Justin. Forgot your question. Oh, man. Sorry, didn't get to you soon enough.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. So my point goes along with Jitendra's comment there, but kind of along with the whole class. So he was making a point that, you were making a point that unless the speaker has a service attitude, he cannot awaken the service attitude in others. But we could see sometimes that even if the speaker does have a service attitude, that doesn't necessarily mean that the, you know, we have to do our own part. So that reminds me, and maybe you could elaborate on this point, that of course we can't get out of this illusion unless Krishna, you know, blesses us with his mercy, unless he's pleased. And so I was thinking of like a pastime I heard recently. I forgot what chapter it is in Krishna book, the wives of the brahmanas, the wives please the Krishna and Balaram more than the brahmanas who know all these mantras, that you knew all these rituals. And so sometimes when we perform in our Shravanam, Kirtana, et cetera, program, a lot of times we may think that's, you know, necessarily pleasing to the Lord, but it's actually based on our consciousness. But how do we distinguish between whether or not I'm being, you know, I'm being kind of aware of my consciousness, I'm doing everything, you know, at least I'm praying to the Lord that I do everything right, even if I, you know, make some mistakes, I'm at least praying to the Lord, you know, sincerely. But how do we tell that we're pleasing to the Lord, or and that we have to be the distinguishing between pleasing the Lord and distinguishing between being patient?
Being impatient.
How do I know that the Lord is not testing my patience? Because sometimes, I mean, we're in a material world, sometimes dissatisfaction comes, you know, how come I'm not feeling the taste or whatever? But how do we know, you know, it's not going to be so easy, the Lord's just going to be like, boom, you know.
Yeah, there are symptoms. There are symptoms of a person growing in bhakti. And we identify by those symptoms. Three main categories. Bhakti, my connection, a sense of connection with Krishna grows. Bhakti, para isha anubhava, I feel the presence of Krishna. I sense Krishna's presence, Krishna's hand. I see Krishna's intervention, however, in my life, in different circumstances. And viraktir anyatra cha, my taste for those past things starts dwindling. So there are some symptoms. And so if I'm feeling more and more patient, then that's a gift from Krishna. Because now I'm operating on the principles of love, even if it's not fully mature, it's the principle of love versus the principle of gratification. I won. Come on, Krishna. You're the one who gives quickly. What's going on? Versus my Kriya Krishna, Tatyenu Kampam, whenever you'd like to give me your mercy, I'm patient to wait. These are symptoms. If in general my sense of expectation from Krishna and Krishna's devotees is reducing, my disturbance by the particular permutation and combination of the modes of nature on a day-to-day basis is changing. It's the kaleidoscope, correct? You turn a little bit, the whole design changes. You turn a little bit, the whole design changes. The modes of nature are like that. This moment like this, 2 seconds later, another thing, another late thing. It's just the modes of nature. And am I being more focused on beyond this veneer of the kaleidoscopical changes? how am I doing in my service to Krishna? Am I growing more and more committed? Do I feel a sense of duty and obligation towards Krishna grow? There are many symptoms to it. What realizations am I getting about Krishna, about bhakti, about the devotees, about myself? Otherwise, the realizations are gifts from Krishna. So, I'm sure Krishna is gifting us. And if nothing else, I'm not getting any realization of anything that I'm doing, then my attention goes back to the old things. Oh, those, my realizations, those were better. And anti-realization. Do you remember your question, Justin Prabhu? No? Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Go Premanande.
We have an announcement. All the devotees' attention, please. We have an announcement.